North Carolina, People, Places, and Progress by Dr. Gary Fries. Chapter 1, The Land Where We Live. This book, North Carolina, People, Places, and Progress, tells the story of the people who have lived in our state. It also tells how they lived. The questions in this book will challenge you to think about why the people in our state did the things they did. We will begin the book by looking at the geography of our state. Geography is the study of the physical features of Earth and its atmosphere and how these affect human activities. Geography asks the question, how does where you live affect how you live? The many thousands of people who have come to North Carolina in recent years are often confused about our state's habits and tastes. Young people from places like Liberia or Honduras may wonder why natives say the things they say and do the things they do. Why does school start in August, and why do some older people keep Easter Monday as a holiday? Why do folks eat so much barbecue, and why do they argue over which kind is best? How is it that the people along the coast sound so different from the folks in the mountains? Who decided that the state should be so long from east to west, yet so narrow in some places from north to south? What causes the soil to be black in some areas and red in others? All of these questions can be answered with a better knowledge of the state's geography. North Carolinians have always made sense about their surroundings by giving different parts of their state names that correspond to the lay of the land, or features of an area. This idea has helped state residents find both an individual and community identity. These identities give North Carolinians a sense of place that often increases their pride in their hometowns and surrounding areas. As you will learn in this book, North Carolinians have always put a lot of energy and enthusiasm into living close to their surroundings. The variety of these landscapes influenced the course of their progress and made North Carolinians into the distinctive people that they are, even today. North Carolina is located in the eastern United States along the coast of the Atlantic Ocean, and the land within its borders rises in elevation as one travels from east to west. Its original inhabitants encountered several different land regions as they spread out and established new homes and communities. A region is a specific area where the lay of the land and the habits of the people are similar. Two of North Carolina's regions are relatively flat, the Tidewater and the Coastal Plain. There, the people traditionally raised large crops of tobacco, cotton, and foodstuffs. These two regions make up the eastern section of the state. The other two regions, the Piedmont and the mountains, are characterized by hills and mountains. These two regions make up the western section. Eastern and western North Carolina are divided by the fall line. This geographic boundary marks where the land changes from Piedmont hills to plains. The fall line is the last point where one finds waterfalls or rapids on a river as it makes its way to the ocean. Over time, the history and culture of the people in these four regions took on unique characteristics. Even though they were all North Carolinians, geography affected how they lived and shaped their life and culture. Section 1. The Tidewater Region. As you read, look for features of the Tidewater Region, the influence of the Barrier Islands, North Carolina's five major sounds, major rivers in the Tidewater Region, and the following terms. Sound: Barrier Island, Cape, Inlet, Gulf Stream, Wetland, Estuary, Pocosin, and Savannah. Water, water everywhere. If you live in this region, or if you have visited it, you know this describes the Tidewater. This narrow strip of land extends along the Atlantic Ocean. In the southern part of the state's coast, the Tidewater is no more than 30 miles wide, but in the north, where inland bodies of water are large, it goes back more than 50 miles in places. The Tidewater includes land on North Carolina's mainland and outer banks. Throughout the region, the land is influenced by the daily movement of the ocean's tides. The tides alter currents in streams and sounds. Sounds are inland bodies of mixed water found throughout much of the tidewater. The resulting mix of salt and fresh water makes the tidewater different from other regions of the state. Barrier Islands. The islands off the North Carolina coast form the beach for much of the tidewater. They have influenced life in the state from the first explorations to the present. Only a few islands, like Roanoke, where the first English settlement was made, sit alone. Most are part of a long chain of sand spits called Barrier Islands, the most famous of which are called the Outer Banks. The region is also known for its capes. A cape is a large portion of land extending into an ocean or other large body of water. The Barrier Islands are really just a very long ridge of sand, spread along the ocean floor, always shifting in the tides and storms that come off the Atlantic Ocean. Like the tips of icebergs, only the tops of the Barrier Islands show above the waterline. Most of the Barrier Islands are less than 2 miles across. The size of these sand ridges can vary. At Cape Hatteras, the Barrier Island is wide enough to support a considerable forest made up of bay, holly, and live oak trees. The highest point along the Barrier Islands is at Jockey's Ridge, located not far from Kitty Hawk, where the Wright brothers first flew. Although the winds shift the sand daily, Jockey's Ridge averages about 114 feet in elevation, making it the tallest living sand dune on the Atlantic coast. Where the sand has low places, inlets allow the seawater to come in and out with the tides. Because the ocean is endlessly churning the sand and the water, different inlets have opened and closed at various times. For example, Roanoke Inlet, which English explorers used in the 1500s, is long gone. Today, North Carolinians in that vicinity use Oregon Inlet, which was carved out by a hurricane in 1846. The very eastern tip of our state, Cape Hatteras, is a huge spit of sand that projects out for miles into the ocean. The ocean current running by it, heading north, is the Gulf Stream, one of the main influences on the world's weather. It carries warm water from the Gulf of Mexico across the Atlantic to the British Isles. Cooler water is then pushed south toward Africa to be warmed once again near the equator. Before airplanes, the Gulf Stream was the road ships took back from North Carolina to Europe. Relatively speaking, then, North Carolina is located at the place where the warm water begins to move toward the colder north. In fact, Cape Hatteras for centuries was known as the graveyard of the Atlantic because frigid Arctic water, called the Labrador Current, collides with the warmer Gulf Stream just offshore, creating turbulent waters that make for unexpected storms. That is why the Cape Hatteras Lighthouse has become so legendary. It served a vital purpose in world commerce, warning ships with valuable cargo of potential danger at sea. These dangerous waters and the cluster of shifting underwater sandbars located just off the coast of Cape Hatteras have been given the name Diamond Shoals. The only true break in the Barrier Islands along the state shoreline is Cape Fear, where the Cape Fear River flows directly into the ocean. All the other rivers in the eastern half of the state flow into the sounds behind the islands. Special feature: Carolina Places, Biking the Tar Heel State. If there are wheels, there is a way to see North Carolina from the mountains to the tidewater, through the Piedmont and across the coastal plain. Increasingly, residents of the state choose to see the sights, hear the sounds, and taste the goodness of the state's wonders by bicycle. Bicycles first appeared in North Carolina in the 1890s. The oldest bicycle repair shop in the state, Hearn's in Asheville, dates to 1896. However, only in the latter part of the 20th century did state citizens make concerted efforts to carve out their own lanes, so to speak, to protect themselves and have a better view of their surroundings. The cycling environment became so inviting that the nation's largest bicycle retailer, Performance, located its headquarters in Chapel Hill. Many communities began to sponsor long-distance races for more serious riders. One of the best known is the Tour de Moore, where hundreds of cyclists joined the Sand Hills Cycling Club for a whirl through Moore County. So popular has biking become that the North Carolina Department of Transportation has promoted the designation of public bike routes throughout the state. The Carolina Connection follows the route of Old Highway 1 from the Virginia to the South Carolina line. Virginia has done the same on its side of the line, and the hope by many is for folks to be able to bike safely from Miami to Maine by the 2020s. Other designated routes include ports of call in the Tidewater and a roundabout through the Carolina Bays, highlighted by a visit to Bladen Lake State Forest. The largest annual ride in the state in the 2010s is Cycle NC, sponsored by the North Carolina Amateur Sports Association. The first event in 1999 went all the way from Murphy in the far west to Manio in the far east of the state. Soon, more than 1,000 riders joined in this annual event. Every year, the ride has gone from the high elevations to the coast, a sort of downhill marathon, noted one observer. Participants, by the way, often gather in Cary and take buses to the starting line. Biking has become, for many folks, a way to enjoy the geographic variety of our state, because large groups of cyclists would have a hard time in congested urban areas, Cycle NC tends to take secondary roads. Most years, riders get to stop and see the sights in places like Troutman in Iredell County or Clarkton in Bladen County. The 2015 riders toured through Saluda, Columbus, and Ellenboro in the west and Wagram and Lumberton in the east. Along the way, they visited the Cradle of Forestry in the Pisgah National Forest and a Century Farm near Lumberton. Such stops each year help the riders understand just how much variety there is to the terrain and vegetation of the land, as well as the habits and customs of its inhabitants. The sounds. North Carolina has five major sounds. Almost half of the Tidewater area is made up of these mixed bodies of water that are just behind the barrier islands. The northernmost one is Currituck Sound, followed, as one goes south, by Albemarle Sound, Pamlico Sound, Core Sound, and Bogue Sound. Pamlico is the deepest and largest of these, at least 20 feet deep much of the year. Each of the major sounds is fed fresh water from a river coming from the coastal plain. Some of the oldest towns in North Carolina are located near the mouths of these rivers. These towns were trading centers where goods could be transferred from river flatboats onto the schooners that would take goods by sea to other parts of the world. The town of Washington, for example, sits just upstream from the mouth of the Pamlico River, which feeds into the Pamlico Sound. The Trent and the Neuse Rivers come together at New Bern and also feed into the Pamlico. In addition to the sound towns, are small fishing villages like Wanchese, Englehard, Atlantic, and Oriental, all of which face the Pamlico Sound. Sedimentation, the depositing of clay or silt or gravel, through time has kept the sounds from being deep enough for large ocean-going vessels. Thus, towns located where rivers run into the sounds like Edenton, Bath, or New Bern never grew into ports the size of Savannah, Georgia, or Norfolk, Virginia. The direct outlet to the sea enjoyed by the city of Wilmington in the southeast corner of the state is why that seaport was North Carolina's largest town through most of the state's history. A large portion of the land in the Tidewater is wetland most of the year, meaning that the soil is soaked or flooded with water. All along its shore are salt marshes where shellfish breed and live. These mucky estuaries, places where fresh water and salt water meet, serve as incubators for a variety of sea life, such as shrimp. Swamps and lakes. The most common type of wetland away from the estuaries is the Pocosin. The term is an American Indian name for a particular type of swamp. It means a swamp on a hill, made up of peat that fills with water when the water level is high. Pocosins are found from the Albemarle Sound all the way to the Cape Fear. They are distinguished by their vegetation, most often having a mix of laurel, bay, and scrub oak trees. Alligator Pocosin makes up the bulk of the land between the Albemarle and Pamlico Sounds. Big Pocosin is located near the town of Washington. Another tidewater habitat is the savanna, where tall grass mixes with scattered longleaf and other types of pine. Parts of the green swamp, the most extensive wetland at the southern end of the tidewater, become savannas in the drier times of the year. The green swamp is the habitat for one of North Carolina's unique plants, the Venus flytrap, a type of trumpet plant that catches a variety of bugs with its hair-lined pitchers. The vital parts of the bugs are gradually absorbed into the plants for nourishment. Most of the natural lakes in North Carolina are in the tidewater. Lake Matamesquite, the largest, is 15 miles across at its longest, but averages only about 6 feet in depth. It is a major landing point for migratory birds along the Atlantic coast and is today a wildlife refuge. Not far from Matamesquite are Pungo and Phelps Lakes, smaller but similar in appearance. On the edge of the southern part of the tidewater, adjacent to the green swamp, is Lake Waccamaw. Its longest stretch is 5 miles, but like the others, it is very shallow. Through time, the tidewater has been one of the least populated portions of the state. Many of the early families either fished or supplied goods to the fishing trade. Some families today can trace their ancestry all the way back to the 1600s. Some residents of Ocracoke, one of the Outer Banks Islands, still speak with a dialect that sounds like their distant ancestors. This hoitoid brogue uses words similar to the English spoken in the days of William Shakespeare. For example, Ocracokers might call over the mail instead of get the mail. They might say they have a gut full of food when they are full from a meal. If they get nauseous, they become quamished in my gut. If they meet someone from another region of North Carolina, like the coastal plain, they will call that person not an outsider, but a dingbatter. The isolation of the Outer Banks reinforced the sound and patterns of this speech over time.